So we have nursery dismissal now. And I will read today from Hebrews 11, first 1 to 4. Now faith is confidence in what we hope for, and assurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, Abel still speaks, even though he is dead. Skipping down to 8 through 11. By faith, Abraham, when he called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architecture and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful, who had made the promise. Then skipping down to 23 through 24. By faith, Moses' parents had hid him for 3 months after he was born, because they saw he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God, rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. And then finally, 39 and 40. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. Since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. So today we have Mark and Trish Edwards with us. For those of you who did not go to the Sunday school class, they are here. They worked in Kosovo for about 15 years, helping the people of Lipien by sharing God's love, promoting ethnic reconciliation, and teaching English. Trish is the daughter of Elaine and Bill Yoder and grew up in East Lewistown, attending North Lima Mennonite Church. Mark and Trish returned 6 months ago and are now living in Columbiana, continuing to build relationships here to share God's love through teaching English as a second language and community gardening. They serve with Crossroad, a non-denominational mission. So with that, the pulpit is yours. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here this morning. Excuse me. We have gotten to know some of you, or Trish has known some of you for some time, having grown up in the area, and I've had the pleasure of getting to know some of you as well, and so we really appreciate the opportunity to come and speak today. Some of you have prayed for us and therefore shared in the ministry that we have had, and we appreciate that as well. So, by the way, the name of our mission is Cross World rather than Cross Road, but that's okay. Sharing the hope of Christ around the world. And we were in Kosovo for about 15 years, and we began building a youth center there. And interesting, I noticed in the bulletin this morning this Better Life brochure. When we built a center, we wanted to have a name for it. And actually, one of our young boys who was had befriended us and who we had gotten to know his family and so on, a Muslim boy, suggested the name the Better Life Center. for the center there, because the goal was to have sports and education and use those in ways to benefit the community and to share the love of God. So it really did provide a better life and better opportunities for some, and we rejoice in that. So we worked with primarily Muslim population, the Albanian population there, but also had many Serbian friends who are Orthodox. However, when we first went there, the Albanians and Serbians, of course, were not getting along, having just finished a war. And so it's important for people to have some opportunity to begin to interact in a peaceful way in sports and summer camps for children, teaching English and so on were ways that we could help the community to have peaceful interaction with one another. And it was good. There were people that would speak together when they were in our center that wouldn't speak together out on the street because they didn't want to say, oh, you're a Serbian lover or you're an Albanian lover, you know. But when they were in the confines of the center and felt safe, they felt free to speak with maybe even their neighbor whom they hadn't spoken to for some time. So God used that center and used us, and we're able over time to build a number of relationships and to use those relationships then in sharing the gospel. Well, this morning, I'd like to remember these words from Hebrews, and then we will bring them back to mind in a minute, in a little bit. But the purpose this morning is sort of threefold. One is to convince us, to convince you, or to remind us maybe, of a particular truth. And second, to remember who's in charge of that. And third, to apply that to the ministry that we had in Kosovo. Now, in the late 1950s, early 60s, there was big news in the evangelical world from Indonesia, the Dani tribe. Their custom was to make important decisions together as a tribe, not individually. And so on one day, the entire tribe accepted Christ, and the church went from zero to several thousand members in a day. How's that for a church growth problem? A couple of years ago in Kosovo, there was a village in central Kosovo that really had almost zero evangelical witness, and yet members of this village got together and they felt like they needed God in their community. And they didn't think that having a mosque was going to be the answer. They didn't think that they had some friends and relatives that were in the other village who were Catholic, and they didn't seem to be getting much out of that. And so they decided, they voted to have a Protestant church in their village. And they didn't even know really what that meant. So they sent a few men to the capital to talk with a man who was the pastor of the church that we attended, an Albanian man who had previously been the grandson of an imam and then eventually accepted Christ and had a church there. And they said, you know, we have these people here and we want to start a church. Well, he was a little suspicious at first, thinking, you know, who are these people? Are they trying to set me up? And found out that they were sincere. And so a group from the church went out and shared their testimonies and witnessed to Christ, did some basic teaching, and about 30 people came to know the Lord that day. Never before heard of in Kosovo before. Well, these are exciting tales, but I'd ask the question, why are they exciting? Why do they really get our attention? Why are they compelling? And I would suggest to you that one of the reasons might be that they are rare. These kinds of stories don't pop up all the time. Usually the path to salvation is slow. We hear things perhaps many times. Trish read recently that the average person before accepting Christ might have been exposed or heard the gospel 7 or 8 times. And so our journey begins, our spiritual journey begins long before we accept Christ, as we begin to learn something about him and to begin to grow. And eventually we hear enough and understand enough, it kind of comes together and we realize that we need to make a decision. And for those of us who accept Christ, make the right decision. That's not the end of the journey. It continues on, as you know. In my own case, I grew up going to church as a child, just about every Sunday. But when I was a young teenager, I rejected those things that I thought at the time were sort of fanciful. I didn't really believe all those things I was hearing. But eventually in university, some friends challenged my thinking, and there came a time in my life where I began doing some extra reading and contemplating and thinking and decided that, yeah, God probably is really God. And a time of actually reading the scriptures. It was the first time that I had actually sat down and read them myself. And finally accepted Christ. And of course, my journey didn't end then. I soon after decided to devote my life to Him. I wanted to be a missionary. And I thought the best way for me to do that would be to go into medicine so I could be a medical missionary, and I did that. And we ended up serving the Lord overseas in different ways. We met Trish and had family and became missionary couple, missionary family. Well, more recently, gave up medicine because in Kosovo we started out teaching medicine and helping in the villages, but eventually that was no longer needed. So as I mentioned before, we helped to build and run a youth center for sports and education. And then in recent years, basically I've been teaching English, or we have been teaching English, but still using those things to share the good news of God. So our journey as Christians begins before we accept Christ. For most of us, it's a long journey, and it may be punctuated by that decision to accept Christ. Sometimes for many of us, that is accompanied by some big changes in our lives, maybe not so much in others. But then our journey continues on beyond that, and even to today and beyond. And so that's what I want us to remember this morning, that our faith, having faith, is a journey. Began before our salvation and continues afterwards. The president of our mission, Dale Losh, has written a book called A Better Way, and it's about mission strategy, but it's also about discipleship. And he describes this spiritual journey, I'll say, in terms of discipleship. Now, some of us tend to think of discipleship as that six-week course that you take once you become a Christian. Well, discipleship is more than that. It's learning about Jesus and learning together about Him. And this is the way that that Dale defines it. Discipleship is learning to live and love like Jesus and helping others to do the same. So it's not just a curriculum for new believers, it's a journey. He also talks about having disciples, getting together with people, learning together, disciples before the cross and disciples after the cross. Now, some people find that to be an odd thing. You're not a disciple until you accept Christ, right? Well, in fact, in the scriptures, we see this pattern as well. In John chapter 6, Jesus is talking to a large group of people, and he begins to teach about things that are very difficult for them to understand and accept. He says, "My body is true food. My blood is true drink. If you don't eat of my body and drink of my blood, you cannot have any part of the kingdom of heaven." Well, can you imagine hearing that for the first time? That was not easy, and in fact, in that chapter 6, we read that many of the disciples said, "This is a hard saying." And on at the end of the chapter, it says, after hearing this, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. So they were disciples. They were following him. They were learning about him, listening to him, observing him. And yet there came a time when they had to make a decision. Some of them decided to continue to follow and accept Christ, but some turned back. So there are those disciples, those people who are learning about Jesus, and that we can disciple, that we can have an influence in their lives, be a part of their lives, even before they become Christians. So discipleship is a spiritual journey. And so the next question then, who's in charge? Who's the tour guide? If we're on a journey, who's leading? Well, of course, the Lord is. God is the author and the guide for our discipleship journey. In Philippians 1:6, he tells us that he's the one who began the journey, and he's the one who will finish it. He says, I am sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. And even in Hebrews, if we read from chapter 11, if we go on to the next couple verses in chapter 12, it says that we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, and we are to run with endurance a race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. So God is in charge of this journey, and he is the one guiding us through. We certainly see this in the lives of these heroes of faith. You know, it's interesting, this last verse, last couple verses of chapter 11 that we read. All these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised. Well, that's kind of an odd thing to read, isn't it? I mean, we read about Abel. He made an acceptable sacrifice, but it says that though he died, he still speaks. Talks about Noah, talks about Abraham going to a place that he didn't know, his great faith, and his faith was counted as righteousness, we know, and so on. He was promised to be the father of many nations, but at the end of his life, did he see those nations? Not yet. Go on, and we read about Joseph, a great man of faith. He died in Egypt. Moses led the people out, was to take them to the promised land, but he never reached the promised land. He was able to see it in a distance, but he couldn't go in. And we read of many others, and it says, all these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised. So the question is, why? Was God not being faithful? Well, of course he was. But you see, God had plans for them that went beyond them. He had plans also for his kingdom beyond their own lives, individual lives, even for us today. And that's what we read. Since God had provided something better for us, that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. So you see, these things, these promises to them, God is fulfilling, but at a later time so that more people can be drawn in and receive the blessings with them. Well, so I want to think about those things as we consider our 15 years in Kosovo. We'll turn our attention now to that work there and allow the scriptures this morning and our thoughts about the journey and who's in charge to sort of inform our thinking. Because in Lipion, when we first arrived, there was no Protestant church in that town. Well, how many Protestant churches are there now? Well, there's still none. When we went there, we didn't know of any other Christian believers in that town. How many are there now who would call themselves Christians and are faithfully walking with the Lord? Man, after 15 years, I got to tell you, I don't know of any. There were many people, well, many, I'd say 8 to 10 people or so who accepted Christ. But because of pressures of society and family and so on, other things along the way have since sort of fallen away. Now we think that they are still on their journey and God is faithful and will continue to work in them. And we believe that he will bring many, if not all of those, back to faith. But, you know, if you look at the number of churches and number of believers in Lipion, you think, what have we been doing there? 15 years and what do we have to show for it? I mean, were we doing the wrong things? Was our time wasted? Was God working at all? Well, I can tell you that God was and is working in Lipion. We're going to show you a short video to help demonstrate that. Now, I mentioned that we had done some camps, summer school camps for children, and some of our students had grown up going to these camps and later served as helpers, translators, and so on for those camps. And in Kosovo, there is another population. The largest number of people are the Albanians, and then the largest minority group are the Serbians. But there's another minority group called the Gypsies, and they are at the low end of the totem pole. They are the lowest socioeconomic group. They tend to be quite poor. And Albanian children there, I think probably Serbian children too, are basically taught those gypsies. You know, they're dirty, they're stupid, they lie, they steal. And that's what a lot of children in Kosovo grow up learning about these people. And one of our former students had an opportunity to do something in her community. She had access to some funds and was invited to write a proposal for a community project. And she thought back on her time in the summer camps, and she thought, you know, she had been working actually in a market in the gypsy community, and she saw these kids. They were dropping out of school very early so that they could dig through trash and try to pick up recyclables and so on to help their families. They weren't continuing on in school. They were down on. They just felt that school was not really an option for them. And she thought, what can I do to help them? And she thought back on our English camp. She thought, maybe I can do a camp for these kids to help them learn, you know, be encouraged about school and have some value and so on. And I mentioned to you the prevailing social context about thoughts about gypsies. And I want you to keep that in mind as you see this film. And I also want you to keep in mind a couple other things. One is that everyone that you see in the film, everyone with the exception of Trish and me, would identify themselves as Muslim. They may not be fanatical, they may not know a whole lot about Islam even, but they would all identify themselves as Muslim. The other thing that I want you to ask yourself as you watch this is, what do you think God is teaching these young people? So could you go ahead and show the video? So Trish and I had a great opportunity working with you last summer for this camp. Tell us a little bit about the camp and how you got the idea.
I grew up coming to the English camp here at Better Life Center. And the idea came exactly from there, because every single summer I would come here as a kid and later on as a translator. And also it's also related to the fact that I have been working in a small grocery store into the neighborhood of the gypsies. So I saw them. They were not going to school, and they just believed school is not for me, and there is nothing we can do about this, because they feel they are excluded.
What was your goal in doing this camp?
My goal was for them to understand that they actually matter. And I achieved this one, because I remember that at the very last day, like, everybody was crying, and they were so emotional, and they were crying because they kept saying they have never felt that way before. Like, no one has never done something like that for them. That was my goal, to also for them to understand the importance of school. That's the theme of the whole project. School can be fun. They had to study, learn stuff.
So now, did you have an opportunity at the end of the camp to talk with some of the parents who came for the program?
Yes, there were actually some parents who were very excited for their kids to actually be, I don't know, achieve something in life. I could see the joy in the parents' eyes. Like, they were excited about them, and they were very happy. I believe, even though it was only 5 days, I believe it could have an impact to them.
How was camp last year?
He's saying that he had so much fun there. They played, they learned math, Albanian language, history, and lots of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Are you going to stay in school?
I can vazhdu shkolam.
Bravo.
Yes.
So, you girls all were helpers at camp. What was your impression about gypsy children before?
Not that good, actually, because in Kosovo we have that kind of mindset. So we just do not like other ethnicities, no matter if they're gypsy or Serbians or... Yeah, but right. Honestly, when I came in here, it actually changed me a lot, and my thoughts about them and everything that I ever thought about them kind of just like faded away, because I got to know them and I got to see how they actually were. So when I first came in here, I was actually trying to change them, but by the end of it, I was the one who was changed, and like my mindset was changed, and everything that I ever thought was actually turned around. I actually love them now, honestly. I saw some of them on the street, and they were all like hugging me. I love those kids. I really, really do.
Yeah. As Fatuna said, I had that mindset in the beginning, but now I went to lots of training, and then I said, like, we have to do a unite of other ethnicities together, because it this camp really changed my mind. Like, I really liked them. I love them.
Yeah. In fact, not just love, but by ending that camp, I felt a little bit sad about them,
yeah,
because a lot of them said that they would love to go in high school, but if they would go, people, the teenagers, the students would be like just laughing at them. They don't deserve to be treated like that.
Yeah, the parents program. Did you get to meet some of the parents then?
We did. Yes, and they were
took pictures with them and sent to them.
Mm-hmm.
The parents were very kind, and they were very grateful for what we did with their kids for the whole week.
Arjunta is one of my students. What did you think about camp? What did you like at camp?
Some of our confidence. Some of our strength.
Some of our corner.
It was so good, and it had so many good things there.
Everything was good, huh? Great. And Nina, are you going to school now?
I came to school.
And how many children are in your family?
So for me in the family, six.
Uh-huh. So you are here to help your mother with the kids, right?
Yes.
My favorite part and my favorite memory was on the last day. We collected the whole kids together, and we asked them what was their biggest wish. And like, some of them wanted to leave the country, and some of them wanted to just buy a motorcycle. And it was just very sweet, because they were like these little kids, and they all had like these big dreams and big wishes. And I just wanted all of their wishes to come true. It would have been the best thing in the world.
So what do you think? Is God working in the hearts of these girls? This morning in Sunday school class, we talked about the Muslim idea of God's love. And it is not like the idea that we have. And in Islam, God's love is reserved for those people who obey all of his commands. And it's something that's earned, sort of, kind of, maybe. The idea that God loves them personally, that God is with them, that God is near, those are foreign concepts. Now, I mentioned that all these young girls would identify themselves as Muslim, but I would say that if you ask any of these girls, does God love you, they would say yes. And you can see that they're learning about God's love for others as well. And they didn't learn that from Islam. And God has been teaching them, and they learned that from Trish and me, but also from many others who have gone over and been part of these camps and other projects there. And so they have been started on their spiritual journey. They are learning about God. Some of them may not even recognize that they're on a spiritual journey yet, but they are beginning to learn to live and love like Jesus. And they do see that there is value in that. They have seen, as I said, it may not click that it's exactly a spiritual journey, but they do see that something is happening that's good. And these girls are, you might notice their English is pretty good. they've been students of ours for a long time, and during that time, we've developed some very good relationships with them and their families. And it's been a joy to watch them develop not only in their English, but in their love for others. And
So it's many of them are just like daughters to us, and it was difficult when we left. But they wanted to express their thanks to us. And this one class, when we left, gave us this very nice thank you gift. And it's directed, in their minds, I think, mainly to Trish and me, because they don't know you. But I know that, I mentioned before, some of you have been praying for us and praying for the work there and maybe contributing in other ways, encouraging. And so this thank you is for you as well. And I'd like to read it to you. It says, thank you for teaching us. Thank you for giving us courage. Thank you for helping us learn so much about ourselves. Thank you for teaching us to be better, kinder people. Thank you for listening when we needed to scream into the void. And thank you for making it feel less lonely. We, all of us, appreciate everything you do. The last few years have been a trip. We hope this isn't goodbye, but in case it is, thank you. You've been a blessing. Our love and gratitude is not enough. We will truly miss you. So, we'd encourage you to continue to pray for the community of Lipyan, not only these girls, but many others who have heard the gospel and have seen the love of God lived out in different ways, and that God would continue to work. You know, at this point, Trish and I have left Kosovo. Times we've sort of asked ourselves, what's going to happen to our friends? Because there's not a Christian witness left in Lipyan right now. There are other believers in the country. Maybe one of you will be one of God's next witnesses in this town. If you're interested in that, please let us know. We'll be happy to help send you on your way. But God is not finished. He is still working. Some of you know the Shanks, Adam and Bonnie Shank. And Bonnie, a few weeks ago, made a comment to us that kind of stuck with me. She said, God does not need for us to be in a particular place for him to work his will. And that's true. God does use us. He does send us and put us in places in order to use us and to give us opportunities to be his witnesses, to share his love and so on. But he's not dependent on us. And even though we aren't there, he can still work. He who began the good work will bring it to completion. So we think back on that list of heroes of faith that we read about earlier, Abel, Abraham and Sarah, Joseph, Moses. They got to the end of their lives, they didn't see the fulfillment of God's promises because God had plans beyond them. And so we pray that God will continue to use what he has started there and will continue to work in them. We've left Kosovo, but God has shown us that the work he began will continue. He started them off on their individual spiritual journeys. He's used us in that process. And now, even though we're no longer present with our friends, God will continue his work in them. So we pray that these students and other friends of ours in Kosovo will one day read these same verses and they remember that God sent us, Trish and me, and some of you who've prayed and contributed, to be part of their spiritual journey. And that even after we had gone, God continued to work in their lives to move them ahead in that journey, even to the point of being saved by grace, so that they can share in his kingdom and that they too can continue to live and love like Jesus and to teach others to do the same. Let's pray. Father, we are grateful.